Chapter 23. Rouge. Aspen had a new tattoo. Seriously, why did he have three now, while she, and honestly, who had done all the hard work in that battle anyway, had none? But she totally wasn't jealous. At all. She sighed as she examined the newly illuminated pinky on Aspen's right hand. It looked like there was a bioluminescent white oil slick just under his skin, which was also now bleached so pale you could barely tell there was skin over the glowy light. "Well, at least now you have a handy nightlight," she joked. Her dad would be so proud. Tessel groaned, but the two males chuckled slightly. Maybe bad jokes were just a boy thing, and they were called dad jokes because once a guy had kids, he felt like he could let his true dorkiness shine? If so, maybe they should do it sooner, because she actually had kind of a thing for dorks. Look at Jace. Nope. Totally not looking at Jace because he was her best friend, not her boyfriend. Different. She cleared her throat slightly and read off the quest that was currently floating at the top of her vision. Quest, Dragon Tales accepted. You have met a dragon who has been imprisoned. Convince her to escape. Success, your enemy loses a great asset in the upcoming war. Failure. The dragon will eat you all, and it's pretty likely everyone in the kingdom will die. When she finished speaking, Silas, whose terrified shivering was just beginning to fade, poked her little head out of Rouge's braids. I don't want to be eaten, the little bat said plaintively. The dragon's cerulean blue eye, larger than the silver platters her dad's college had used at the last Winter Eve feast, because all college professors were dorks, blinked open and rolled to focus on the bat. You speak? Everyone staggered slightly, and Rouge held up a hand. Hold on, dragon. First, what's your name? Second, could you, like, think more quietly? Please. Third, you heard that? A sense of distant amusement filled the pained voice that answered her. I am sorry. I forget how fragile you mortals are. The eye blinked dismissively at the smear on the floor that used to be Panganoon. I did not care if I damaged that one. The blue orb looked back at Rouge. You may call me Beryl. Of course I heard your tiny friend. She spoke, did she not? Rouge nodded. That was in party chat, though. No one not in the party should be able to hear it. The enormous head rocked ever so slightly, dismissing Rouge's small concerns. I am a dragon. The dragon said simply. Tessel was staring at Rouge. Wait, the half-dwarf hissed as if everyone couldn't hear her, you have a bat in your party? Rouge bit her lip, suddenly aware that this was supposed to be a secret. Aspen chuckled softly, resting a hand on her shoulder. He hadn't gone more than 2 feet from her since the battle ended, and he kept touching her, as if he was afraid she wasn't real. Seriously, it was like having another dad. Why did they worry so much? You may as well let her in, the tall man said. Though I struggle with trust myself, I believe we must extend trust to gain it, and she has proven herself tonight. Rouge tugged at one of her braids, then nodded decisively. She threw a party invite to Tessel. The player you have invited is already in a party. Ask them to leave their party and try again. Oh. Duh. Tess was probably partied with Doom Bloom and Fluff. Rouge smiled a little sheepishly at Tessel. Yeah, so we can party with natives now, at least sometimes? And Silas is actually more than just a pet. The half-dwarf's mouth opened and closed. Twice. Then she held up a hand and shook her head. Okay, back to that later, but right now, I don't want to be eaten. Rouge giggled. That's what Silas said. The two girls grinned at each other. 5 minutes later, they were all much more serious. So let me get this straight, Rouge said slowly, from where she was leaning against the wall near the hole Aspen had blown through it. These rotten, she clenched her teeth against the words she wanted to use, fop doodles stole your baby, and then convinced you that if you ever wanted to see him again, you had to do what they told you to do, which, as it turns out, involves letting their god eat your soul, and then get turned into some kind of zombie dragon? Bone dragon, Aspen murmured. Beryl released a sigh that set her dangling scales quivering, and nearly knocked Rouge off her feet. Pro tip, half-undead dragon breath is nasty. Even in her home pod, Rouge could smell it way better than she thought was reasonable, and she wanted to brush her own teeth in sheer self-defense. You have the gist of it. I am held here now by the Hayas they were able to place upon me, when I swore to do as this god required. But even were I not, I will not leave while there remains a chance I may reunite with Malachite. Alas, I fear he is dead, but until I am certain, here I shall remain. Beryl sounded resigned to her fate, but Rouge's hands fisted at her sides. Allah? Nope. No way are we leaving you here. I mean, even without the quest. Though, you wouldn't really eat us, right? I mean, we're friends now. The dragon did her minimalist head shrug thing again. I hunger, she said simply. Then added, I would let you go, but the Hayas compels me to feast on the flesh of innocence, that I may become ever more corrupt. No other innocents are available to me, and even now I struggle to resist. My will is weak after so long. Rouge gulped, and all four of them took an involuntary step away from the suddenly once again threatening form of the colossal reptile. Rouge nearly stumbled over some fallen rubble, but managed to catch herself and maintain her dignity. So, her voice cracked and she cleared her throat and tried again. So, do you know where they're keeping Malachite? Beryl's voice was bitter. The Panganoon told me he was kept only a little further down the hallway, in another room like the one through which you entered. He enjoyed mocking me and my helplessness. I enjoyed crushing his head. Aspen's head lifted from where he was examining his shiny finger. Wait. The Panganoon? That wasn't his name? Indeed not. That was that creature's title, and he shares it with at least a dozen others. They take turns feeding me, though this one was the one who came most often. Damn it, Aspen muttered. I knew this was too easy. He looked at Rouge, fixing her with his topaz eyes. We need to go. Though I hadn't met one of this ilk before, undead creatures like this Panganoon usually have some connection with their master. He will know his creature has died, and send others to discover the how and why of it. The longer we linger, the more likely we are to be trapped, and we have no chance of winning against 11 more of these things. Fear not, holy man, Beryl said, her eye drifting closed as if she were exhausted. All but one have been sent on other missions. I heard them discussing it when they last changed places. You should go now, however, she yawned, showing a mouth full of disconcertingly sharp white teeth. I will not be able to restrain myself much longer. Tessel was on her way to the door through which Rouge and the Panganoon had entered, almost before the last mental syllable was done echoing in their brains. Okay, guys. Let's go. The warrior was swinging her axe like it was a baton. We have a baby dragon to save, right? Rouge and the others exchanged glances, and they all followed Tessel with perhaps a bit more haste than was entirely dignified. Aspen, bringing up the rear, came to a halt when they emerged from behind the massive golden throne, and he was finally able to see the room properly. He pointed to the desk. Tessel, he said. Tessel just nodded and headed to the desk, gathering everything there into an extra bag hanging from her waist. Rouge was impressed. Is that the 500 slot bag? She stared as more and more papers disappeared. Every one of those would take up its own slot in the other woman's inventory, and most people could barely afford 50 slot bags. Tess shrugged, cheeks flushing slightly as she shoved the last book in the bag. Yeah. They had a sale last Cyber Monday, and I hate inventory management. Fortunately, I like cup noodles, because I was pretty broke for a while. Totally worth it, though. Whoa, Rouge's eyes widened. I wonder if Dad would let me get one with my savings. I mean, he says I should save up for a car, but that's so cool. Tessel laughed. You should save up for a lot of things before you get a bonus bag. Though I bet you could afford one with in-game funds now, if you wanted to. I heard about your big haul. Holy cats. You're right. I increased my bank storage and the size of my primary inventory, but I didn't even think about. Aspen cleared his throat from the door, and the two females turned to look at them. Rouge tugged at a braid, which, she was starting to feel, wasn't nearly as satisfying as pulling her curls, though her dad got after her for that, so maybe it would help her break the habit? Sorry about that, Aspen. We're coming. The hallway was just as dark and ominous as it had been on the way in. If anything, the grotesque monsters depicted on the walls were even worse now that she had met one of them, and knew that they were more than just artistic flair. Aspen grew grimmer and grimmer the further they walked, his icy gaze sweeping over the murals and carvings that covered every inch of the walls and ceiling. Rouge hurried up to walk beside him. "Do you recognize these things?" she asked. He pointed to one particularly ugly baddie, eating something she didn't want to think about, too hard. "I believe that is our friend, the Panganoon." "This," he drew a finger over one of the more human-like images, who were standing closest to the god figure with his arms open over them all, "is probably a vampire." A chill ran down her back, and Rouge remembered Jezere. The vampire queen had been part of the trials Rouge had had to face in order to reach Gina's temple, so that she could accept her subclass. "I thought vampires were extinct. Like Akuji called all of them to be in his army, and they were all killed in the war. Except for Jezere and what's his name, her son, and William, of course." Aspen's voice was bleak. "That is what I believed, as well." A hiss echoed down the hall from Vaughn, who was leading the way, since he was still really good at being quiet even without using his stealth skill, which was just as borked as hers was. An instant later, Silas winged into view, fluttering down to land on Rouge's shoulder. "There's a door up ahead, but there's somebody guarding it. He looks really bored, and I don't think he noticed us because he's kind of singing to himself." Rouge frowned a little, then gestured in a hold-on motion to Aspen and Tessel, who was wearing pretty black slippers on her feet, even though the rest of her was covered in hunks of metal. Cautiously, she edged forward until she was crouching beside Vaughn, who was plastered against the wall and standing so still that Silas had to pinch Rouge's neck with a wing thumb to keep her from running into him. The wood elf tilted his head down the hall, and Rouge squinted into the darkness, glad for the billionth time that she'd picked a race with dark vision. Sure enough, there was a really, really bored guard standing by another big black door like the one she'd entered when she'd met Panganoon. He was wearing a green-trimmed hood, and above his head, she could see three characters, in OO. He was a player. Thinking fast, Rouge pulled her own red-trimmed Maskaclava hood thing up over her head, disturbing Silas, who squeaked in protest. Then she strode confidently out into the light given off by the guard's glowstone. "Ah, hey!" she waved nonchalantly. The player, who had been using the air guitar emote while singing Vijay's Money for His Heart, immediately jerked to a halt. Even behind the mask, Rouge could see the deep red color that suffused what showed of his skin. He choked, waving her off when she stepped forward as if to pound him on the back. It wouldn't do any good, of course, but it was the thought, right? "Ah, did you? See? No, but..." The guy finally stammered to a stop, then tried again. "So, are you, like, my replacement? Where's Jones? I thought he was supposed to. But you're just a red, and... anyway, who are you?" Rouge pointed above her head, where the first three letters of her handle should be visible. "Round Robin." "Duh. Didn't Jones tell you?" She really wanted to keep going, try to add some details to make it sound more realistic, but she knew she'd probably just say too much if she tried, so she bit her tongue. N00 shook his head. "Nah, man. That's typical. Nobody tells me anything." He stepped away from the door. "Well, whatever, right? This is the lamest cult quest ever, but at least it's worth some good experience." He started to walk off down the hall, thankfully away from her friends, because she would have felt kind of bad about killing him, then glanced back. "So, Robin, right? Just, don't tell anyone about." He mind strumming a guitar, and she grinned, then zipped her lips and threw away the key. He sighed in relief. "Thanks. See ya around." With a wave, he walked off, already humming under his breath. She would be willing to bet he was one of the ones who streamed music into the game. As soon as they couldn't hear Enoa Whatever's slightly off-key warbling anymore, Vaughn emerged from the darkness behind her. He shook his head in admiration. "That was truly wonderful, Lady Rouge. I would have simply slain him." She shrugged, feeling her cheeks heat. "Best not to kill travelers if you can help it. We just come back, and we can be pretty cranky about the whole thing. Plus, we can talk to each other in our world too, and he probably actually knows some other maskers. He'd let them know there were intruders down here, and then we'd have an army on our tails. Bon hissed a breath in through his teeth, then bowed slightly. I hadn't looked at it from that perspective. You are wise, my lady. Rouge was pretty sure her face was going to just burn through her mask, but fortunately Tess and Aspen showed up at that point. Aspen looked at the door, his face a study in disgust and frustration. How did you get through the other door, Rouge? He spoke quietly, though she was pretty sure the door, being at least 4 inches thick, would block any sound from passing through. She shrugged. I had a skeleton key. I just let myself in. Aspen nodded, contemplating the large keyhole. All right. Was there a guard at that door? I didn't see any signs of one, but travelers' bodies vanish much more quickly than those of natives. Nope, just a great big door. So this one is different. Maybe because Panganoon was in the other one, she ventured. If this one needs a guard, maybe it's unoccupied? He nodded. We'll step back. You try the door. If the guard was all the deterrent they needed, it may simply be open. If there's someone inside, try to bluff your way through again, and if things go badly, we'll back you up. Rouge huffed out a breath. Yeah, because the bluffing is going so well for me today. He quirked his half smile. You did well with that, traveler. We'll back you up, he repeated firmly. Muttering, she took hold of the door handle, then waited for everyone else to step to the side, so they'd be out of easy line of sight. Gritting her teeth, she pushed. Nothing happened. She pulled. Nothing. The door was definitely locked. Aspen growled in frustration. Do you have another magic key? She shook her head. Tess coughed slightly, then waved a hand toward Aspen's waist. What about your ah worm thing? Rouge's eyes shot to her friend, and Aspen, with an aha expression, pulled an actual worm from a little pouch on his belt. As Aspen knelt to slide the slimy little critter into the keyhole, Tessel met Rouge's eyes and winked cheekily. A loud and slightly gooey click sounded, and Aspen stood back up with a triumphant expression, tucking his worm back into its pouch. Aspen stepped back and waved to Rouge. After you. Rouge stared. Why did Aspen get all the cool toys? She definitely needed one of those. Everyone resumed their positions, and Rouge shook off her distraction, drawing in another bracing breath. This time when she pulled on the handle, the door swung silently open, revealing a room which was completely different from the one where she'd met the Panganoon. Cautiously, Rouge stepped inside what was clearly a laboratory. Carved runes covered the floors, some of them filled with crouching, pacing, or prostrate captives. Shelves lined the walls, housing books, jars, and neatly labeled pots of all shapes and sizes. 3 long tables stood to one side, cauldrons bubbling and steaming alongside beakers of various potions. A man stood with his back to them, his hands waving as he attempted to infuse some sort of spell into a concoction that was spitting sparks in front of him. As Rouge entered, the man jerked, his concentration broken, and the spell backlashed, wrapping his hands in fire. He yelped, flapping the appendages wildly, and began yelling as he turned. Damn it, Neuberger! How many times do I have to tell you? Breaking off, the mage's dark eyes narrowed and his crispy hands formed into claws. Who the hell are you? I don't recognize you, and only upper-tier greens should get this quest. As the smoke produced by his ruined spell cleared, she could see that his hood had a deep orange trim. Ah, yeah, she tried, Jones couldn't make it so. Bull, the man said abruptly. I just saw him less than an hour ago at the induction, before that crazy priestess started up with her, you're all going to hell crap. Try again. Rouge sighed, then said conversationally, I could use that backup now. Before the man could respond, she'd crouched and pushed off with her ridiculously powerful legs, leaping up onto the closest table and knocking as much of the contents onto the floor as humanly possible. Howling in fury, the mage lunged at her, but before his feet could even leave the ground, he sprouted a hand axe and 2 daggers from his chest. Gasping, he spun away, his eyes locked on Tessel, Vaughn, and Aspen, who had entered behind Rouge and spread out, deploying their distance weapons. His hand scrabbled for a large glowing purple orb that sat on the table behind him, and it rolled to the edge of the table, where it teetered, nearly falling. In an instant, Rouge assessed the situation. Either it was good for them if the orb broke, or it was bad. Given the way the guy was making no effort to catch the glistening ball, She was going to go with option two, and no one else was close enough to do anything about it. Leaping into a dive, Rouge did a forward handspring, then twisted into a spin kick on the way down, sweeping the enemy's feet out from under him. Meanwhile, she reached out to catch the tumbling sphere and fumbled it. Hissing, she watched as the bright glass shattered, releasing what she now realized was smoke into the air. "Ha!" the mage shouted, scrambling to his feet. "It's just the two of us now, kid." Rouge looked around, hearing choking coughs coming from behind her. Aspen, Vaughn, and Tessel were all on their knees, and blood sprayed from between Aspen's lips as he struggled to breathe. The deadly smoke wreathed her friends, and she could see their health crashing like a freight train rounding a curve with no brakes. Warning! Party member Aspen, NPC, has fallen below 50% health. What the heck was in that dumb ball? And why wasn't it affecting her, or Silas? She suddenly realized that she could still feel the bat's furry warmth against her throat, and she hadn't received a message saying the small creature was injured. The mask. The stupid, ugly, magical mask. Aspen, she sent urgently. Mask up. Now she could only pray he got it before anyone died. Catching a spark of light out of the corner of her vision, she realized that she'd almost forgotten the orange trim masker who had broken the sphere in the first place. Spinning out of the way, she nearly dodged a magic missile, the weakest but fastest spell in any mage's arsenal. You have been dealt 47 points of damage by player Neo. Holy hangdog! 47 health from a magic missile. This guy had to be several levels higher than her. Level 70? 80? Whatever he was, that left her with 178 hit points, and if he could nail her with a few more of those, she was as good as dead. Rolling away from where the had thrown her, she found herself beneath the table where Neo Huzit had been working. A moment later, another magic missile hit the ground near her, but pretty far from the furniture beneath which she was hiding. Was there any chance this guy still hoped to salvage whatever it was he'd been working on? Figuring it was worth a shot, she finished her roll, bouncing up so that the table was between her and Neo. The smoke was beginning to clear, and she hadn't received any more notices about Aspen's declining health, so she was really hoping he was going to be fine. She couldn't check at the moment, but that didn't stop her from muttering a quick prayer to Gina. "All right, dude, that's fine. Just you and me, huh? Keep thinking that, jerk," she thought, desperately hoping it wasn't true. "You might want to look over there." She pointed behind him toward the farthest part of the room, triggering, "What's that?" as she did. He laughed. "What was that? Some kind of distraction skill? Forget it, kid, I'm not stupid." He threw another magic missile at her, but it was a half-hearted attempt, and she could tell from his shifty eyes that he was up to something. She shrugged. Worth a shot, right? Meanwhile, she was desperately turning all her skills and spells over in her head. The obvious one was poof, but anyone who wasn't a member of her party could suffer from the smoke inhalation or poison debuffs, which meant she could accidentally kill Vaughn or Tessel if they were close to death. Poison Rain and Tarion Puncture both required her to attack from above. Knockout required stealth, which was blocked. Wally wasn't there, so no awesome ostrich attacks. She eyed the unfortunately well-lit room. No shadows for Shadow Glide. She was pretty sure she wasn't going to barter her way out of this, so it was going to have to be. She reached forward and pushed a flask off the table. It crashed to the floor, and Neo squawked indignantly, reminding her unavoidably of Nuisance the Duck. "Hey!" the mage shouted, taking a step forward, glowing hand raised threateningly. "Do you know how long I worked on?" She pushed off another flask. It shattered, and something in the resultant orangish goo writhed slowly. "Oh, gross, dude. What have you been making in here?" Neo pulled at his hood in an agony of frustration. "Stop. Just stop. Come on. I don't know what quest you have in here, but don't ruin mine. It takes days to make those things. I have to log in every 3 hours and stir it. I even have to set an alarm. I haven't slept properly in a week, and I was almost done. This is why no one takes the alchemist subclass." The man was whining by the end, and she would almost have felt sorry for him if he hadn't just tried to kill her. She pushed off a small silver cauldron, and ribbons of red fabric spilled across the floor, steaming slightly. She nudged one with her toe, and it seemed to twitch unnaturally. "Seriously, what do you do in here?" Something caught the corner of her eye, and she plucked at the red trim of her hood. "Is that how you make the trim for all these things? Seriously? That's your big project?" The mage began to edge around toward the door, slowly, like she wasn't going to notice. She pretended not to. He went on talking, obviously trying to distract her. "There are like 4 spells just in the black trim hoods, and it takes 7 different ingredients. The red trim takes 6 spells and 10 ingredients. We set quests for what we need, but some of that stuff is really rare." He was almost turned, so his back was to the door now. "You don't even want to know what it takes for the orange ones, and only a master alchemist." As he took his final step, allowing himself a clear path to her, his hands emerged from where they had been hidden in the sleeves of his robes. Both hands were glowing. "A double caster. Great." She dove to the side again, throwing the mombele, which she had been holding loosely, as if she'd forgotten she had it. The weapon whipped through the air, with the full force of 50 points of strength behind it. "Let him be a glass cannon, please." She managed to avoid one of the magic missiles, but the other one caught her side, once again punching her like Joe Louis taking down James Braddock. And the next time Uncle Milo started waxing poetic about boxing, she was going to let him know how she actually felt about it. "You have been dealt 96 points of damage by player Neo. You have dealt 114 points of damage to player Neo." Rouge sprawled on the ground, watching the pulsing red notifications of a stun debuff compete with equally frenetic ones, alerting her to the 3 cracked ribs on her left side. She couldn't move yet, but she had a direct line of sight beneath the table she had been sheltering behind. Neo's robed figure staggered backwards, and a few drops of blood spattered on the ground near his feet. No death notification appeared though, and he didn't go down. Not really surprising. At his level, even if he'd poured most of his stat points into intelligence, he had to have a few hundred health points. Then one of the huddled figures of her friends, Vaughn, rose with lithe grace from where it had been lying, and bright metal flashed. Another one of the corpses stood, Tessel from the shape of it, and swung an axe with vicious precision. As Neo grunted and his knees buckled, the final form stood, and Rouge would have laughed if she could, to see Aspen rubbing his lower back. Stick, now at its default length, struck out, crushing the player's throat and finally dropping him to the floor. "You have assisted in defeating player Neo." Aspen was at Rouge's side before Neo's body finished crumpling to the floor, and she was particularly grateful because his body blocked her view of the rather gruesome mess. Her friend quickly restored her to full health, and Rouge was back on her feet within a minute. Vaughn and Tessel were already scouring the room for clues and valuables because loot, with Tess tossing everything not nailed down into her big ol' bag. Aspen smiled tiredly at Rouge, pulling off the simple black mask that he'd bought to protect himself from the stench of the tannery. He held it up. "Thank you." That gas was incredibly lethal, and it was difficult to think while under its influence as well. "If you hadn't reminded me of the masks, you and Tessel would likely be the only members of our party to see sunshine again." "What about me?" Silas demanded indignantly, wiggling her way free of the red-trimmed mask that Rouge still wore. Aspen reached out a hand, and Silas climbed into his palm, snuggling down as if she was the one who'd been doing all the work. The tall man gently stroked the bat's soft ears, a gentle smile on his usually rather stern face. "You as well, thank Gina?" "If you hadn't been in Rouge's mask," he frowned, deep lines suddenly bracketing his mouth and eyes. "Well, fortunately you were, so we shall let that pass." He looked up at Rouge, then flicked a glance at Neo's corpse, which, having been looted by Tess, was already fading. "What do we do now?" She sighed. "That guy's probably already on whatever forum or chat the maskers have set up, calling for reinforcements. We need to hurry and get out of here as quickly as possible. The only thing that's likely to save us is that this isn't exactly the kind of place where anyone wants to leave their zombie, so it should take a little while for people to get here." Aspen nodded. "So time is even more of the essence than it was before. Silas, start looking for anything draconic. Be cautious, since the baby won't know we're here to help him." I don't think we need to worry about that. Tessel's voice was sad, and everyone turned to look at her, where she was standing near one of the runic circles that contained an ominously silent form. Everyone else hurried to join the warrior woman, and when Rouge saw what lay there, she wanted to kill Neo again. Fortunately, the odds were decent that she'd get the chance, someday. A sad little shape lay in the circle. It was so skinny Rouge thought she could count every bone in its body, and it laid utterly still, green scales dull and sunken, half-open eyes clouded. Rouge's fists clenched at her sides. "I," she said, "am really starting to hate these guys." Tessel's blue eyes met Rouge's hazel ones, and they shared a look. Sure, this was a game, but this was like those people who ignored their mounts. The devs had at least built in a process for punishing people who didn't take care of their horse, but this? This was not cool. Aspen leaned forward and lightly touched one of the runes carved into the floor. He cocked his head consideringly, then drew stick from where it was tucked into his belt, once again in cudgel form. The subtly carved metal cap glowed for an instant, and became the miniature sickle again. Aspen sliced into the stone floor, scratching the runes, which flickered an angry red and dimmed back to blackness. Leaning forward, Aspen scooped up the limp form of the baby dragon. Its head dangled limply, and he frowned, shoving his small staff back into its makeshift holster. Aspen cradled the dragonling's head, which was about the same length as his forearm, showing that the baby was larger than it had appeared when it was curled up in its prison. The farmer frowned, then looked up at Rouge and Tessel. "Release the rest of the prisoners. Just cut the wards. If they're sapient and want to come, bring them with you. Gather everything you can. Burn everything else. We'll have to go back out through the tunnel in Beryl's prison." Rouge stared at him. "But how will Beryl get out?" Mouth quirking in a grim half-smile, Aspen answered, "You'll see." He headed for the door, carrying his cargo as if it were made of blown glass. Vaughn, Tess, and Rouge looked around at the other occupants of the runic circles. Many of them looked to be past saving, while others stared at the invaders with eyes that barely dared hope. None of them were human. At a quick glance, Rouge saw there were at least four humanoid creatures that she didn't recognize. The others were beasts, several of them so twisted that she wasn't sure what species they might have been to begin with. The three of them exchanged glances, and Rouge hooked a thumb at the shelves and tables behind them. "Tess, you have the awesome bag of awesomeness. Get grabbing until you can't grab anything else. Just, leave anything that looks like it used to be part of a critter. I have a bag for that." One of Tessel's blonde eyebrows rose, but the warrior just nodded and headed back to begin what would probably be the fastest looting of her entire gaming career. As soon as Rouge saw Tess chucking all the things into her bag, she was once again determined that she was going to get one of those. For now, though, she had another task. She looked back at Vaughn. He nodded at her, far grimmer than she'd ever seen the usually gregarious elf. "Break all the seals. I know not what they do, but it is possible they have some sort of raised dead curse in them." His expression turned sad. "Also, these poor creatures deserve to be free, even if it's in death." She nodded back, then looked around. "All right, folks. Anyone who agrees not to try to kill us when we let you out, raise your hand." "Or a hoof," she added, taking in a faintly zebra-like creature who was looking at them with a disconcerting degree of intelligence. Hands and hoof went up. In the end, there were 17 survivors. The dead far outnumbered them, but Rouge and Vaughn, with the assistance of a few of the more able-bodied former prisoners, made quick work of all 50 wards, including two in the back that seemed to contain the remains of the largest orc she'd ever seen, as well as something that might once have been a wyvern, and had been well on its way to becoming a bone wyvern, if that was a thing. Which she supposed it was, since she was looking at one. Six of the survivors were sub-sapient animals, all of them somehow marked by the experiments that had been performed on them. A particularly warped calf had two heads and long fangs, but also seemed very docile, even to the extent of following a young dwarf around after the little girl dared to pet it. Nine sapients remained, all also touched by their captivity, though the extent of those changes varied widely. Some of them tried talking to her as they were released, but mostly they were all silent except for the occasional sob or pained moan. Rouge ignored the talkers because as much as she really, really wanted to know what had happened here, Now was not the time. There were three dwarves, a man, a woman, and a teenager. All of them now had deep black skin, red eyes, and no hair anywhere on their bodies. When released, they quickly moved to nearby circles that held the corpses of others who looked like they might also have begun life as dwarves. Two elves stood alone at opposite sides of the group, and they seemed to be making every effort not to look at each other. One was tall, almost stretched, and cadaverous, with hollow cheeks and long claws. All signs of gender, which were already difficult to find in the androgynous race, were gone. The other elf had gone in an entirely different direction. Her hair, eyes, and lips were now all blood red, and her femininity was far more visible than the racial specs were supposed to permit. A long barbed tail emerged from beneath the filthy dress she wore, and two almost metallic black horns poked through the hair falling around her forehead. Only one orc was in the group. He remained relatively unchanged, though his blunt tusks were now sharp, and his eyes were a strangely luminous shade of pink, while his skin and hair were bleached utterly white. The remaining three, who seemed intelligent enough to understand what was going on, were now beasts, though Rouge honestly couldn't tell if they had once been something else. When she tried to identify them, she just got back a series of question marks. The first was the small golden zebra, who watched the events around it with a strangely calm demeanor. The second was something that looked very much like a gigantic guinea pig with orange fur and a long fuzzy tail like a squirrel. The last one had the head and shoulders of some scaled anteater-like creature, and the back half of a bird, complete with a brilliant red underbelly, black feathers on top, and huge clawed feet that would have made Codswallop envious. This one watched Rouge with an intent and almost hopeful gaze. "Okay, everybody. If you can understand what I'm saying, then you know we need to get moving. On here," Rouge pointed, "is going to lead you to a way out. There's a dragon in there, and she's probably really sad, but she's not going to hurt you. I hope." 15 of the 17 followed, though some of the non-sapients were led by the humanoids via rope Tessel had produced from her inventory. Two of the beasties had run the instant their confinement was breached, and no one had time to chase them down. It was sad, but there wasn't much she could actually do, given the current time crunch. Rouge turned back to Tess, who was now dropping things like rags and a small mountain of wolf teeth on the ground. The half-dwarf shrugged. "Finally ran out of room. A lot of this stuff doesn't stack." Rouge nodded, pulling out an item she'd gotten from a quest months ago, and had since nearly forgotten. "Body bag, this item can hold any number of bodies and body parts. It will only take up one slot in your inventory. This item is soulbound to Rouge the Rogue and cannot be sold, traded, given away, or dropped. Usually bags couldn't go inside other containers of holding, so this was already a slightly overpowered item. Add the fact that it had infinite space inside, as long as all you wanted to put in were body parts, and it was a little ridiculous. Honestly, if she could sell it, she could have made a mint from someone who liked to hunt monsters for levels. Which frankly, seemed like almost everyone except for her, which made it especially ironic that she was the one who'd gotten this thing. Now, however, she stuffed toad spit, wyvern teeth, worm hair, and werewolf tails into the bag, leaving anything that wasn't once attached to a living creature for Tess. When she found herself pouring a jar labeled gall of a two-headed serpent after a jug of eyeball eyes, she decided she was done. Aspen had explained that the disgusting jars of critter bits in his secret rooms were actually powerful alchemical ingredients, and the same was probably true here, but a girl had to draw the line somewhere. She looked around the room. With everything living except for themselves now gone, the space felt oppressively silent. She had always hated gross body-strewn torture shambari dungeons in games, and now, surrounded by what felt like the reality of it, she was grateful that she'd never gotten into horror games. She would have had to throw away her entire collection after this. Tess came to stand beside her. "You ready?" the woman asked, pointing at a table where she'd stacked up all the bottles of goo Neo had been working on. "Yep, go for it." Rouge dropped back out of the door. Behind her, Tessel cast a fireball, holding it in her hands until it was as large and powerful as she could make it. The half-dwarf released the spell, nearly leaping backwards out of the door. Rouge slammed it shut, and they both ran back down the hall as quickly as they could. They got about three steps before the boom behind them blew the door they'd just closed off its hinges. Virulent green and purple flames burst out, engulfing the hallway. Rouge swallowed hard. Well, that escalated quickly. She heard a choked giggle from Tess, and then they were all off again, running towards the place where Aspen waited with a dragon.